Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
So welcome to Affair Recovery Radio. I'm Wayne Baker, and I'm here with Dr. Karen Royer. Rick and Leslie and John are all out of town, or they're recovering from the wounded...
From Harboring Hope.
Yeah, the wounded. I'm listening here looking at this book. So you guys are stuck with Karen and I tonight. And this is the first time you and I have done this show together, so it's going to be fun.
It should be fun and interesting. Glad to be here. Yeah.
Well, tonight, guys, we are going to talk about abuse. Not just sexual abuse, but also physical, spiritual, and emotional abuse. And the good news is that we have one of the best experts in the field on staff and here on the radio tonight. So now I'm putting a lot of pressure on her.
Nothing to come up to, Wayne. That's right. That's great.
but Karen is an expert, and I learn tons from her daily on just the topic of abuse. So Karen, I want to ask you, I'm just going to jump right in here. How do you define abuse, and how did you get involved in this field?
This field? Mm-hmm. It's not a likely field, is it? I mean, it's kind of hard. It's tough, but I got into the field out of my own abuse and trying to sort things out. And I have to tell you that didn't start until we moved to the country. I had been abused as a child by, we had a jewelry store in small town Texas, and the man next door had a furniture store, and he would lure me there with the promise of seeing a new kitten or a new puppy. And so it was very convenient to commit abuse in that setting because the upstairs of his store was very isolated. So I got drawn into the affection of that because my family was very emotionally distant. They grew up, went through the war and the depression. And so for them, the most important thing to provide for us as their children was food and a place to live and clothing. And they did that extremely well. But they were just very emotionally distant. So in a way, that set me up for finding affection, and I found it through the man next door. And I knew at that point of six or seven, that no one in the community would believe me because he was an upstanding citizen and was on the city council and, you know, all that small town stuff that happens. And so I knew if I told that would not happen. And then I also had a cousin who was much older than I was, and he was a decorated Korean vet, and he knew when my grandmother would take a nap, and he would come over and rape me week after week while my grandmother was sleeping. And I used to hide, we lived by a creek bed, and I used to hide in the culverts or those openings for the creek bed with the water moccasins, and it was much better company with the snakes than it was
a different kind of snake.
To be able to be caught by him. So I really pushed that under. I thought if I could, it's a mechanism for survival when you're a child, to develop self-protection so that you can survive. And so it's not unusual to compartmentalize things. And that's what I did. And as I got older, went through high school, I really thought that that girls were to be used for that purpose. And so I was very promiscuous, but also very good girl because I grew up in the church. And so my coping mechanism was service in the church. And so it looked like I was this real pulled-together Christian, but inside I was tormented. And then we got married, and I have four children, four wonderful children. We went, you know, I got distracted by all of that. It's very easy to get distracted when you're dealing with abuse. And then about 22 years ago, we moved to a town of 71 people. And I can tell you.
From small town to smaller town.
To smaller town. Yeah, I thought my other town was small. This is really small. And we lived out in the middle of nowhere. And I have to tell you that that is what really sent me on the journey to healing. Yeah. Because if you really don't have your stuff to work out and you move to the country, it's going to find you. And so I started a road to recovery that continues today. And wow. I do love working with women who have been hurt. And how I define it, you know, I think defining abuse is not often done. It's not done correctly in our culture because we think it should be rape or date rape. But what we're forgetting is that just a man touching a girl's clothed breast is a form of abuse that can have huge ramifications for her later in life if she doesn't deal with it. So it can be very something that we would minimize, and it's not to be minimized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, society minimizes it, but then the victim or the survivor of it, even just that touching a clothed breast, a woman or a young woman.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
exactly.
You know, maybe he really didn't mean to do that, or it wasn't that big a deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard that.
I shouldn't tell my mom because I know I'm making too much of this.
Right.
And that's just not true.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, something you said earlier, too, going back to your story that caught my ear was this whole idea that he lured you. And there's that, and he's a man that you knew. And that your family knew and the community knew as a fine, upstanding. Is that a myth maybe out there that sexual perpetrators are, or, you know, people that prey on children are just these gross, homeless?
Oh, that stereotype?
Yeah,
no.
The stereotype.
Mm-mm. No. In fact, many men in power can use that against women. I just knew. I knew they wouldn't believe me. And the other thing, the other part that's hard to understand is when you're lured with something, then there is that measure of guilt that because I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know what was wrong in that. What was wrong with longing for affection, because our longings are real and not to be discounted, but it was met wrongly.
Yeah. Well, and then you also said the other thing that was just so telling was along with the longings, and now I forgot what it was.
The longings and the
well, how they get met and how we have these defense mechanisms as kids that work. And then we get into our 20s and our 30s, and those defense mechanisms that worked well as children, while we were children, they don't work so well for us as adults.
No, they don't.
Do you see it that way?
I do see it that way. And you know, if someone's struggling with this, trying to understand, is this a value in my life or not, there are some real negative consequences to child abuse. So if you've got someone in maybe a small group or Bible study group or someone that you know that has some of the symptoms that I want to talk about, they may have been abused. And so you really need to perk your ears up, like you said, and listen when someone's telling a story for what is underlying that. So, for instance, the emotional effects of child abuse are low self-esteem, depression, and anxiety. eating disorders, relationship difficulties, withdrawal, and personality disorders. And I have to tell you, the one thing that's not on this list that is pulled from one of the seminal books in the field is trust. Mm. I know that if a woman cannot trust, then there's abuse in her background somewhere. Not necessarily sexual. It could be physical. It could be emotional. It could be spiritual. But there's abuse somewhere that she's not dealing with. And there can be physical effects, too, such as injuring yourself. You know, the rise in cutting in our country is astounding, especially with the category of 8 to 13-year-old girls. And that frightens me as a culture that we're going in that direction, because 20 years ago, we didn't talk about that. Now, I'm sure it was around, but we didn't sit around and talk about cutting as a problem. Lifelong health problems, headaches, migraines, back pain, fibromyalgia. Now, I'm not saying that those aren't valid. They are valid, but that can be some of the effects because you bottled all that up for so many years and not had an outlet to heal.
I know you've used your work. Most of your work has been with women.
Yes,
but you also work with abused men as well. What are some differences?
Well, the sad thing is, I haven't had the opportunity to work with too many men because men do not come forward like women do. Mm. And it does look a little bit different. There's more anger, it seems like to me. There's more the issue of controlling others. Mm-hmm. There's probably more emotional abuse that is perpetrated on a significant other or their spouse. And so it does look a little bit differently, but I think anger for men and trust for women.
Yeah. And is there something that it's the root of that, like shame or...
Oh, what a good topic. Yes.
We could probably talk for weeks about shame.
Shame, yes.
Well, that's good.
We could. You know, there is... shame is huge. And when you're thinking about shame, because it may mean different things to different people, if you think about shame as being an experience of the eyes, then it does help. For example, I bet you can remember an embarrassing moment where you just wish the floor would open up and you could be swallowed up by it.
Sure.
Don't we all have some of those? Yeah. That's a mild form of shame.
Mm.
Because one question to ask yourself is, what do you do to yourself when you lose your keys? You know, most of the time I go, gosh, you're so stupid. Or, can't you remember where you put those? And so in that way, I'm shaming myself. And granted, that's mild, but it's there. And then that can lead to contempt, which is just really hating yourself.
Yeah.
Very, very severe hate of yourself. And you either have contempt toward yourself or toward others.
Yeah, and it's debilitating. I mean, when you talk about those, the physical symptoms of the headaches and the fibromyalgia and the other things, that contempt just, in my practice, just continues to feed that stuff.
Oh, you're right. You're right. I suffered from migraine headaches for years. Mm. And I have been to every doctor known to be an expert in that field. And in the past 3 years, those have minimized. The more I've gotten in and the more I've, you know, done some solitude and silence time, I've been able to work through more of that abuse and those headaches are gone.
Wow, that's great.
Almost totally. I won't tell you they're all gone, but they are minimized. I don't want to. You know,
don't overstate it.
Don't overstate it.
You never know. That's right. Well, I think, you know, I want to go back a little bit, too, and just emphasize the reason why you and I decided to talk about this tonight is because, I mean, it is a Fair Recovery Radio. But we see there is a pattern, how would you describe it, or a correlation, connection.
Mm-hmm.
between infidelity and abuse. Infidelity, you and I talked earlier, it is a form of abuse.
It is a form of abuse, and I think we don't think about it in those terms, but of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's rejection, and there's just all kinds of things that are going on with that.
Yeah.
And I just lost my train of
thought. Well, and there's some similarities, I think, in the way you deal with abuse and the way that you deal with infidelity, too, right?
There are similarities, and I also have found in my practice, and I bet you found this, too, that many women who are either betrayer or the betrayed have been victims of abuse of some kind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting thread that as I work more with the infidelity part, that I'm seeing a connection there. And I kind of think that we need to deal with that first, with the abuse first, and then the infidelity.
Hmm.
So it's kind of it's a lot to work on.
It is a lot. It is a lot. But the other thing is, and I know, you know, this is Christian Talk Radio, and you and I are both Christ followers, that God can heal all of this stuff.
Absolutely.
It can take a couple years or more, or 20, or who knows how long.
Yeah, as you learn and you grow and see deeper things that happen, one thing we might talk about is one question that comes up a lot is, where was God?
Mm.
You know, where was God in all this? And I think that is really important for a woman to come to grips with.
Yeah, how do you answer that?
Well, you know, I struggle with that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where was God? Why didn't he protect me if I'm a Christ follower? Where was he? Why couldn't he protect me from that? And so I've wrestled with it to the point that now I see God there suffering with me. I see Christ there with tears in his eyes.
Mm.
Wanting to help, but for some reason, you know, that they tell us, Scripture tells us that sometimes God cannot intervene because of what's going on in the spirit
mm-hmm.
world, and
mm-hmm.
Earth is Satan's dominion.
Yeah.
So that's how I answer that, and I really believe that.
Yeah.
But it takes a while to get there.
Mm-hmm. And that he wants to and still will redeem it. And
mm-hmm.
and even in your case, something that was horrendous and horrible has now become
passion.
A passion, a ministry, you know, a huge focus of your life to help other people through this thing.
Absolutely.
And we see that in our infidelity work with our couples and stuff too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how, and along the lines of infidelity and abuse, because of infidelity being the spouse,
mm-hmm.
well, we can say the husband, but
more and more
women.
More we're seeing women.
Women. Uh-huh. Because they're the abuser, they also have a key role in the recovery. And how important is the support, I guess, really, of the spouse?
Wow.
To the woman that's been abused, either as a child or even in infidelity.
Well, it's just key. You know, I was so fortunate that my husband, I found someone, his name is Dan Allender, and he wrote The Wounded Heart. And when I started working on this, he was fleshing out the material for the book. So he was doing seminars across the country.
Hmm.
And I got it when I heard him speak. And it seemed like to me he was the only person that really understood the deepness of the hurt and the ramifications and why life was turning out as it was before I dealt with this. And so I was real fortunate that my husband let me fly all over the country, and I kind of became this groupie until I got it, you know. But it worked for me, and it was biblically sound. And, you know, then the book came out, and that is my Bible for abuse.
And that's The Wounded Heart by Dan Allender?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wounded Heart, and there's a Wounded Heart workbook. And in the workbook, there are little snippets of journal excerpts, and a lot of those are mine.
Huh.
So I really believe
in
that project.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to take a break real quick. We would love to hear from you guys. We would love to hear your questions or comments or anything you want to add. Please give us a call at area code 512 865-9930, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you could have the marriage you've always wanted, even after being cheated on. If you could avoid losing a huge chunk of your standard of living, why would you sentence yourself to an empty, lonely room? Divorce sucks. The emotional trauma and financial loss are much worse than what you think. And infidelity can be cured. It's not as hopeless as it seems. AffairRecovery.com. Almost 90% of the couples completing our program not only enjoy restored marriages, they report a much higher level of marital satisfaction. AffairRecovery.com. Don't give up before it gets better. Join the ranks of those who found new life. AffairRecovery.com. Where healing happens.
Does your life seem void of meaning? Do you struggle with depression? Is marriage not turning out as expected? Are you disappointed in the intimacy you share? Has an unwanted behavior taken your life hostage? Do uncontrollable feelings flood uninvited into your life? If so, we can help. Crossroads Counseling is a group of highly trained mental health professionals dedicated to Jesus. Crossroads Counseling is unique in its team approach. Each member has developed a specialty in order to complement their overall goal of helping each person they serve experience the freedom and abundant life afforded through the life of Christ. Give us a call, 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or visit our website at crossroads-counseling.net. There is hope and healing. We believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
So welcome back. Again, I just want to give you the phone number. It's 512-365-9930. We would love to hear your questions or comments or anything you want to add on this topic or anything else you've heard on Affair Recovery Radio. So, Karen, you wanted to go back and revisit something.
I did. I'm not sure that I answered your compound
that was question. I'm glad we weren't in a therapy session because that would have been really bad to ask more than one question at a time.
Well, no, it was fine. It was logical. I just didn't pick it up. I really don't think I defined sexual violence or sexual abuse very well, and so I'd like to do that because it includes all forms of sexual behavior where a person is forced or tricked or coerced into sexual acts without consent or when the person feels violated sexually. So the lure of the kittens and the dogs, mm-hmm. puppies and the candy, that was trickery. So any sexual activity without mutual permission is ultimately defined as abuse. So that's pretty inclusive. Verbal consent must be ordained in each instance of abuse. I'm sorry, each instance of sexual intimacy. Yeah. So a child just doesn't know how to deal with that. And I did not mention the fact that the power differential is really key when a child is dealing with an abusive situation. If an authority figure, such as we've seen happen, unfortunately, within the church, that's really hard for a child to say no to because this is someone they believe in. It's an authority in their life, and so therefore they have trouble saying no, and they don't have that capacity to say no.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you and I talked earlier today about, you know, parents watching over their kids. Did you want to make any comment about that? I mean, I think that's so key because we don't, this power differential, and a perpetrator is very slick and mm-hmm. smooth and nice, and They love me and care so much about, most of them do. I mean, they're not all that way, I'm sure. But.
And you just mentioned to me today a story of a little girl who had been trained right and had the power to say no.
Yeah.
When someone asked her to help him find his lost dog.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that I am overprotective, or was overprotective of my children.
We share that.
I mean, and I finally just had to say, you know, just get over it. Just accept it because, you know, I know what I hear. So, yeah, especially I have grandchildren now, one's 7 and one's 2. And, you know, they want to send them to camp this summer. And, of course, I'm just being a little too overprotective in that area. But it is good to tell your children.
Educate them
more than don't talk to strangers, because many times abuse is not carried out by
a stranger. Right.
It's by people that you run into every day, and they're in your everyday life.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we have a caller. Kathy?
That's me.
Hi, Kathy. Where are you calling from?
Oregon.
Oh, hi. Well,
hi.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, you guys are talking about a subject that's really dear to my heart tonight. You're talking about abuse, and you're talking about the effects of it. And when I was 17, I was raped. I was a virgin. In fact, back in the 70s, I was probably the only girl in my school that, you know, didn't sit around and brag about all my escapades of boyfriends. And I was real proud of it. And I went to work and I met a 42-year-old man at my job. And we only lived a couple of blocks from my job, and I was walking home one night, and he attacked me. Mm. And when I went to my mother afterwards, I was told, you know, we don't talk about that. It must be my fault. I shouldn't have been walking home that time of night. And, you know, just blah, 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 blah. And so I never really got any real resolution from it. And from that, I met my first husband. And on our first sexual escapade, I got pregnant.
Mm.
And in some ways, sex became painful for me. Does this make sense to you?
Yes, sure. Yes.
Okay, so through my life, I learned that there's a huge difference between sex and making love. And I absolutely cannot do the sex thing. I need to be soul-to-soul connected to somebody because of the abuse. And my husband's a sex addict, and he never intimately connected with me in our bed. And within about, I don't know, 11 years into our marriage, I got fibromyalgia.
Just agreeing with you.
Yeah,
I couldn't walk. I woke up one morning and I couldn't walk. I couldn't make it to the bathroom, and before I knew it, it was going up my legs, my back, my arms. I was getting headaches. I had gotten migraine headaches after my rape, and after I had 3 children, I started getting migraine headaches as well. I never associated it to abuse. But on Discovery Day, when my husband, and this is pretty bizarre too, because with my fibromyalgia, my doctors prescribed me narcotics to help me deal with the pain.
Sure.
And I had probably been taking pain medication for like 3-4 years to help me be able to get out of bed and function. And on my Discovery Day, the day of Discovery, my fibromyalgia just totally went away.
Wow.
And I didn't need pain medication anymore at all. It just, like, my body went into shock, and I think, and I never went through any type of withdrawal from not taking any type of pain medication. The fibromyalgia went. Does this make sense?
Yes, total sense.
Okay, how does that happen?
Good question.
That's a good question, which probably warrants a much longer answer than we're able to get.
How long ago was Discovery Day for you, Kathy?
13 months ago.
Okay.
And you've been pain-free since then?
Yes.
And is your husband, is he working his recovery program? And
well, yes, he's changed. Yes, he's working on change. Yes. In fact, Rick, I called in last week with the anger issues.
Okay.
and I have kind of come to the conclusion that some of my anger is even over that, because
sure.
I did lose.
Mm-hmm. Sure, because this current situation with your husband can trigger all the old stuff. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree, Karen?
I do agree. And the simple answer to how that could happen is because you had all that emotion pent up within you, as I did. And once you begin to release that and work on it, then, of course, the pain should diminish. We would hope it would. And that's just a great story, Kathy.
Well, it didn't just diminish. It was just
gone.
And I thought maybe it was because my body had just gone into shock and just it just disappeared. But it stayed gone. I have a disc problem in my neck, and my neck problem has, you know, come back, but not the fibromyalgia, not the deep fibromyalgia pain. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of share that, because I really realized how emotional abuse, loneliness, isolation, the absolute emotional abuse, how it can so physically affect you.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
Well, there's research also that talks about how even down to the cellular level, the neurobiology of our bodies, we remember down to that level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a cognitive thing. It is emotional memory or a body memory.
That's so true. I was thinking about that as you started talking. Mm-hmm. You know, there really is that body connection, too. I mean, it can't help but affect your body. So it just makes sense. I remember hearing that the muscles have memory.
Mm-hmm. And the muscles have memory?
Yeah, the muscles have memory. So that they would revert back to previous behavior or, you know, previous ways of acting and being. So it makes sense. It really does. I think it's great.
Well, Kathy, thanks for calling. We really appreciate it, and we wish you and your husband all the best.
Well, thank you. I thank you, and I hope that this message helps others that are dealing with the physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
Of abuse. So.
Thanks, we do too. Keep listening.
Okay.
Thanks.
Right, thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah. Well, so Karen, were we finished talking about the definition of...
I think so, but let me talk just a second about, you know, we've focused on sexual abuse here almost exclusively, and I've also noticed kind of a rise in the people I'm seeing in the emotional abuse. And I don't know, Wayne, if you're familiar with the Power and Control Wheel, I bet you are. But as I got online before we came here, I discovered there's a new, brand new Power and Control Wheel for 2008. Mm-hmm. So it just uses bigger words, which I don't know if that's good.
Is that helpful? To people like me,
know.
It may not be so helpful.
Well, it's like using obfuscation. You know what that is? Well, the old one says minimizing, denying, and blaming. And I really like that.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so we haven't talked about that a lot. But under that wheel, we have using intimidation. You know, by making threats and just an intimidating someone.
Especially with like battered women, battered wives.
Yes. Battered wife syndrome,
yeah.
and domestic violence situations. Using emotional abuse, like Kathy was mentioning,
mm-hmm.
is certainly rampant. Isolation, like if your spouse keeps you from getting a job or won't provide transportation for you, won't let you buy a car, you know, those isolating incidents.
Or in instances of infidelity where he, in certain examples, will try to keep you from talking about this or going to any kind of recovery group.
Exactly.
Or anything like that. So,
yeah, because then he wouldn't be found out and that would be problematic.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then, of course, the minimizing, like we mentioned earlier, there are some people that just don't think that small sexual contact, you know, a kiss that misses your cheek and ends up on your mouth, you know, that had to be a mistake. And then using your children, making them feel guilty, using male privilege can also be a form of abuse, using economy abuse, and using threats. So that's the broader definition, I think, of what abuse really is.
Yeah. Well, and we see this intermingled all the time. Somebody, a perpetrator or sometimes an unfaithful spouse won't use just one, but they can use, mm-hmm. they're good at two or three of these. Is that correct?
That's a very good point. Yeah. Yes. They major in a couple and minor in others.
Yeah. Well, what about also this, the idea or the notion about memory? Because you hear people talk about, well, I've had some clients that fit some of this criteria that you've talked about,
mm-hmm.
But they don't really remember an act of sexual abuse.
Specifically.
But there's something back there. And certainly there's the mistrust. There's anger or a lot of shame or guilt.
Mm-hmm.
But can you talk a little bit about that? And then also this, I haven't heard it in the news so much lately, but the false memory stuff as well.
Yes, that was really on the rise in the early and mid-90s. But let's talk a little bit about memory. I think there are two theories surrounding memory. One is your memory is like a file cabinet. So you just have to keep looking for the files until you find the right one and you can pull it out and use that. So that involves, you know, lots of therapy, lots of going back and looking at your past and trying to put puzzle pieces together. The other theory of memory, which I pretty much ascribe to, would be like if I took a beaker of water and then I poured a cup of milk in it, you would see that milk begin to be absorbed with the water, and so it all mixes together. So for me, I think memory is misty, you know, at best, and I really don't believe going on a witch hunt for memories. If God wants you to remember, you will remember. And I think for me, he gave those things to me bit by bit, not catastrophically. You know, it wasn't a big thing. It was just pieces began to fall in place that made a lot of sense. Now, false memory really started, I think, with children, where children were called to testify in a court case, and they had been kind of pre-coached. And you know, with a child, if you tell a child a story long enough, it becomes part of them, and they tell that story. So I think a lot of therapists got in trouble for maybe coercing that memory into being. So I believe that if there's something there, God will show it to you when you need to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just really don't go diving for memories.
Yeah, I just agree wholeheartedly with you. I mean, I've said it that almost the same way, where if God really wants you to know, he'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
He'll reveal something to you. Let's don't go looking for trouble that we may or not know
exactly
is accurate, because we know memory is reconstructive.
Yes.
Anyway, so, well, that's interesting. So how do you deal with the client that really wants to explore that? Are there any, do you just kind of coach them through, we're going to trust God here?
Mm-hmm.
I know you do theophostic prayer too, which I
do.
I love that too.
Do theophostic prayer, which I just love. In fact, that was very instrumental in some of my latest healing, was doing theophostic prayer. But we take them through the same thing we would if someone presented a problem of abuse and what do I do with what it's doing to my life. So we would kind of go through the same thing. And just see what happens. And usually, you know, healing occurs. God shows up when we ask him to be.
And that's what's so much fun for people, right?
It is.
For us as therapists,
and for
too.
Us
and
to
God,
see.
When Holy Spirit directs it,
mm-hmm.
So it looks like, do we have another caller?
Billy.
Billy?
Yes.
Hi, Billy. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Austin.
Okay. Great.
I turned down my volume when I was dialing because I figured I shouldn't be listening. So at the same time, but so I think I might be interrupting what you're saying.
No, you're doing.
But
you're
I wanted
fine.
To ask you if we could go back for a moment to the memories and to flashbacks, possibly, and talk a little bit about because I've experienced a lot of healing from abuse in my life, but I still have at least 4 or 5 very vivid memories that come back to me as flashbacks and paralyze me physically for the moments that I'm in that. And I'm wondering, I think I want to do some more work on that, but I'd like to hear what you have to say about dealing with some of those flashbacks.
Well, you know, I still have flashbacks too. And sometimes things that occur in dreams are related, especially to the rape situations. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to be relieved of that, but I know where to take it now. It's like when I get a flashback, I know that I need to take it to God and say, you know, why, you know, what are you trying to tell me? Is there something else I need to do, something else I need to see, someone I need to go to, you know, what do I need to do to work on that flashback? And mine have diminished with time. I don't have yours, Billy?
Most of them have, but these are very traumatic memories of seeing things happening to my mother and also of violence, being strangled, those sort of things. Those have not diminished. I also do have a lot of dreams that I feel are connecting me a little bit more and showing me a little bit more about how to take care of myself. And I've developed a few little breathing patterns I can do to get through it, and then it goes away. But I wondered if there was any particular, I thought I heard about a therapy using your eyes or something.
Oh.
Therapy that you could do to help with those sort of things.
We have just happened to have the resident expert on EMDR sitting here. So, Wayne, why don't you talk a little bit about EMDR?
Yeah, is that what you're talking about, Billy? Is it?
Yes,
the
that's
eye
it.
Movement?
I couldn't remember the letters.
Yeah, it's EMDR. It stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. And what we think we know about the brain, because we're constantly learning stuff about the brain, is that traumatic memories, whether they happen to us or to others, get stuck or locked into the right hemisphere of the brain. And what we've got to do, and you know, that's our emotional, somewhat irrational, creative side. And so what we've got to do is bring it over to the left hemisphere, which is our cognitive, logical, reasoning side of us. And that's done either through eye movement or any kind of bilateral stimulation, having the therapist tap your hands or shoulders or whatever you're comfortable with. Or I use these little vibrating paddles in my office, especially with survivors of any kind of sexual abuse. So I want to respect the distance between them. And it's really pretty amazing, Billy, what can happen in a short amount of time doing EMDR. There's a lot of setup. I'm not saying it's a really quick therapy, but it can be. It depends, you know. And then like Karen, I don't do theophostic prayer because I haven't been trained in that, so I don't want to pretend that I do. But I do some healing prayer along with that. And like we were talking about earlier, the Holy Spirit just shows up and I have seen profound healing, and I probably worked with more, I don't know if I have more male survivors just because they feel comfortable coming to me or something, but that's just been what's come to my office.
Right.
But also some women that were sexually abused as children and then a couple raped in adulthood too. So I would encourage you maybe to try that out. It's a great form of therapy.
And I
well,
have
thank
to
you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Billy. I have to agree with Wayne too, because I did a lot of research on EMDR the past few months, and I'm really, really impressed with what I found. I mean, the research out there is mixed, as you would expect it to be,
yeah.
but what I've seen happen in Wayne's office is pretty astounding.
Yeah, so. It has become the most researched form of therapy in the last 10 years, I think.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Well, because partly we need to study up on it a bit and maybe come down and see you.
Yeah, please do. I know there's some more information. You can go to EMDRIA, EMDRIA.org, and there's several good articles there about it.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate your help.
Well, sure. God bless you. Thanks for calling,
Thanks,
Billy.
You too. I'm loving your show.
Great.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. Keep
thank
listening.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been very helpful.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so I think what we'll do is take a quick break.
Mm-hmm.
Please continue to call us. We love to hear from you, and that number is 512-365-9930. And we'll be back with you in just a minute.
If you could have the marriage you've always wanted, even after being cheated on, if you could avoid losing a huge chunk of your standard of living, why would you sentence yourself to an empty, lonely room? Divorce stinks. The emotional trauma and financial loss are much worse than what you think. And infidelity can be cured. It's not as hopeless as it seems. AffairRecovery.com. Almost 90% of the couples completing our program not only enjoy restored marriages, they report a much higher level of marital satisfaction. AffairRecovery.com. Don't give up before it gets better. Join the ranks of those who found new life. AffairRecovery.com. Where healing happens.
It's a dirty little secret. Infidelity can be cured. Betrayal doesn't have to end in divorce. In fact, the best marriages I know are those that have recovered from betrayal. Join us each Sunday evening from 9 to 10 o'clock at Affair Recovery Radio and experience God's greatest miracle, the miracle of redemption. Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God on KLGO 99.3 and 98.5.
So welcome back. Thanks for you guys that have called in. We would love to hear from more of you. That's what makes this more fun for us mm-hmm. and more interesting, probably for you guys, than to listen to us talk back
exactly.
and forth all day. But I did want to remind you or let you guys know that we do have an emergency marriage seminar coming up next weekend. I believe Friday is the 11th.
I think so.
The 11th, 12th, and 13th.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so if you're interested in that or know someone that is particularly for couples that are trying to fight their way back from infidelity, whether that's a sexual affair, a pornographic affair, emotional affair, one-night stand, or a long-term history of affair or addiction. And I know there are a couple of spots left for the next weekend, and you could call our offices at 512-346-9299. We'd love to have you come.
You know, Wayne, I went through that. I love what we do, and that we have a really, I guess it's not bragging if it's real, but we have a great success rate
mm-hmm.
with the program that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
About 90% of our couples stay
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
So I'd really encourage you if you're struggling with that. It is so worth it.
Yeah.
It will change your life.
Yeah.
If you'll let it.
Yeah, I agree. So Karen, we've got just like 10 minutes or so. What are we going to do the rest of our time? What's on your heart?
Well, I think one thing that I haven't talked about is the cycle of abuse. And for people that are familiar, I mean, they'll recognize this. They may not know to call it the cycle of abuse, but it's what normally happens, especially in a domestic violence situation or a real controlling spouse or boyfriend. And it begins with phase one, where there is tension building. And the tension increases. You don't communicate very well. The victim feels like they need to placate the abuser. And so that's when the tension is rising, and you can just feel it. You can feel the tension. You could cut it with a knife. It's so thick. And then phase two is the incident. There is an outbreak or an outlash of verbal and emotional abuse. There's anger, blaming, arguing, threats, intimidation. You say things that you wish you had never said, but you can't take back. And then, of course, what happens with the abuser is reconciliation. Sorry, I can't talk. The abuser apologizes, probably brings flowers and a gift, perhaps blames the victim or denies that it occurred or that she's not remembering correctly. And so that kind of leads to what is called the honeymoon phase, or phase four, the calmness. The incident is forgotten, in quotes, because it's really never forgotten, and no abuse is taking place. And so the abuse thinks, oh, everything's fine. You know, we're okay now. That's not going to ever happen again. And then, of course, you immediately go back to tension building again, and the cycle continues unless you intervene with something to help within that period of time.
So what about the abuser? How much the role, I think I've read, is does self-hatred play a role in him as a male abuser? I mean, does that make sense? I don't know if I asked that question correctly, but
no, that makes sense.
Is there a big part of that, this self-loathing, self-hatred?
There is a huge part in that, and it's just how they handle that self-loathing. It's like they're almost giving, I feel so bad, I want to give it to somebody else, and this is a release. And the power feels good, and the control feels good. And so underneath that, yeah, is a lot of self-loathing and contempt.
Mm-hmm. And so when he's making amends, I guess, you know, he's, in some situations, I'm assuming that he's being manipulative. But in some, he probably really does feel those things too, right?
I think so. I think there's a definite mix of, you know, one that knows that works and one that's doing that just because he's sincere, and he doesn't know how to stop.
Yeah.
He has no clue to how to stop this monster that's raging inside.
Yeah. So any ideas on how they do that? How do they stop? I mean,
you know, I remember hearing someone say that awareness is always the first step to recovery. So just becoming aware that you're doing that, or that the abuser is doing that, is a real first step. And I think once they recognize that, then if they don't have an accountability partner, or at our church we call them running partners, someone to come alongside you and pray with you and talk you through these problems, then they really need some outside intervention to kind of relearn what's normal, because they don't know what normal is. And I know in our office we talk a lot about pretend normal, which means you're just, you know, pretending everything's fine, which is what's happening in that honeymoon phase until the explosion happens again. So there just has to be that first awareness step.
Yeah. And I know there are programs here in Austin specifically for these batterers or abusers.
There are.
Yeah. So, okay. So we've got just a couple minutes left. Was there anything else that came to mind about how to deal with this, how to recover?
Well, you know, I was just thinking as we were talking about what would really be a domestic violence situation, that there really are two great resources in the Austin area. And one is Safe Place, which is kind of north, I guess, north, or I'm not sure. They have a website.
Yeah.
You should go to that. I mean, it has lots and lots of resources on it. And then if you're in the Round Rock area or out where we are tonight, there's Hope Alliance in Round Rock. And both of those organizations do a tremendous job with their program, with their counseling, with their outreach to the community. They're very invested in the community. And they're wonderful places to go if you need to get into a shelter immediately. And I would just encourage you, if you're in that situation of domestic violence, to take that step and to go get help. Because that really is, if safety is a concern, that really is where you need to go to be totally safe.
Hmm. So I know you talk about sometimes too a safety plan. How do
yes.
you go about putting together that safety plan?
Well, I've developed many a safety plan for a woman who's being abused at home, and she knows she needs to leave. But you really have to have a plan. You can't usually just get up and leave, especially if there are children involved. And so it would include things like having a packed bag that's hidden in your closet that has identification that you need, kids' birth certificates, you know, your birth certificate, Social Security, all of those things, so that when the opportunity comes that you can leave and start over somewhere. And I'm talking about a severe domestic violence mm-hmm. situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not something that could be handled in the local counseling office, mm-hmm. somewhere where she knows she's going to get killed if she stays. And unfortunately, a huge number of Texas women die every year just because of that. So it would include things like that. Depending on where she was, where her needs are, what her resources and her access to those resources.
Well, along those lines, the other things that a woman can do for herself. You mentioned something earlier in the hour about, I think, a solitude retreat or...
Mm-hmm. Self-care.
Yeah, self-care. What are some ideas that you have there?
Self-care is huge. And you know what? This is not just for women that are abused. This is everybody needs. Because we run so fast in our culture and we're mm-hmm. so easily distracted with TVs and movies and on it goes. But, you know, I love to walk the labyrinth. Mm-hmm. And there's several in town we're very fortunate to have.
You know what? I heard that we have... the highest number of labyrinths per capita
we do
in the country here in Austin. Yeah,
I thought it'd be Seattle.
Well,
that's great.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you have the opportunity to, some are inside, some are outside. Mm-hmm. And so if you just do a search for those, you'll find them. And that's a real calming experience. The other thing I like to do is just really center myself with a word or with a scripture. And just sit alone with that. And I promise you, if you sit alone with God, He will show up.
Mm-hmm.
And He will talk to you in ways that you've never heard before over the din of our American capitalistic society.
Yeah.
That's probably my top ones. But, you know, bubble baths and things like that yeah. are fun. You should do those things to take care of yourself.
Yeah. Well, Karen, this has been fun for me, and I feel like we have just barely scratched the surface on the issue of abuse and even where it intersects with infidelity.
Yes, we've just scratched the surface.
Yeah. So somebody will be back next week. I don't know who's on tap, but it'll be somebody, and we'll be here at 9 o'clock Central Time on Affair Recovery Radio. We are so glad that you joined us, and thanks again, callers, for calling in. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.